Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with us. My website is www.jbsba.com. And I'm excited about having Joan Pride back on the show because it's always fun when she's here. I rarely get abused from anybody else like I do, like I take from Joan. She's the only one that can do that. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, do your worst.
Jim, it's nice to be back.
Oh, come on. Come on, that's so out of character for you, Joan.
Right.
It's good to have you back. How you doing?
Oh, fine, thanks, Jim. How are you?
Doing great. It's great. Let's get right into the letter and talk a little bit about the job situation. You guys say that things are picking up a little bit, although we don't need to get too excited. It's not like it's going to spin our head around.
Well, that's true. We're saying that, you know, you may not feel like it's a boom, but trust us, it's going to be one if you just hold on long enough.
Yeah. What's it going to be? How many jobs are we looking at for this year?
Well, we're saying the pace will be moderate, and we're saying a total of 1.8 million this year. Now, to me, that sounds pretty good.
That's pretty good. What have we lost? About 2.5 since Bush took office. We've lost about 2.5 million, I think, something like
right.
that.
Right, so we can make up the whole, although even though his economic advisors say we can make up the whole thing this year, we really can't.
Yeah, but he needs that to happen, though, before the election, doesn't he?
Well, the 1.8 would be a good start.
That would be.
That.
And the thing is that would start, even though the number might not add up, it'll at 1.8, that'll start to feel like things are doing pretty good, won't it?
Oh, no question about it.
Yeah. And you know, Joan, another thing that we'll be hearing about, and I think this is the truth. There is some evidence. Some people have evidence that the recession actually started in the fourth quarter of 2000, when Mr. Clinton was still the president.
Uh huh.
And if you remember, Joan, when you and I were doing this show in that year, and we talked about the fact that a lot of people felt that capital recession hitting in the fourth quarter of 2000. Remember that?
Yes, vaguely I do.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure.
And I don't remember what I had for breakfast. But.
but I remember that, and that really happened. I mean, I was talking to people in the fourth quarter of 2000 who said, "Jim, my business is dried up. My customers called me, and I mean, I had a guy who told me he had two big customers in one day call him. They didn't know the other one. They called him in one day and said, I can't do any more business with you.
Boy.
I'm not even sure I can pay you for what I've already ordered in one day.
That's scary, yeah.
And that happened, that was in the fourth quarter of 2000. So anyway,
right.
my point is, even though all those jobs have been lost on Mr. Bush's watch, the potential for them to be lost actually, you know, was loaded up before he took office. And of course, that's what he's going to be saying.
Well, he can say that all he wants, but and I agree that that's correct, but the perception is that the jobs are not there now. So that's what people are going, they can't vote against Clinton now. They can only vote against whoever's there now.
Politics is nothing if not perception, right?
Yeah, it's not always fair, you know.
Well, the other thing,
it would be fair.
And you guys pointed this out in the letter this week, that the 1990s, and that's kind of what I was alluding to a while ago, The loading up I was talking about was, we did that in the 90s. I mean, we overhired in the 90s, didn't we?
Right, exactly. And again, another basic, very basic economic point that I'm sure the average person doesn't think about is that job growth is always a lagging economic indicator. It lags behind everything else.
Right, exactly.
So when we're talking about, well, there's an expansion starting, we're looking at the leading economic indicators that are telling us what's going to happen. So the lagging ones still really need to take some time to get up to speed.
Absolutely. You know, talking about the employment in the 90s, I remember Bob McTeer, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, was on this show in 1999 when we had, like, what was it, 4.2 unemployment or something like that? And he said, we have in America today, we have full employment. Well, this week, the chief economist of National City Bank, Richard DeKayser, was on the show, And he says 5% unemployment is full employment. So if they're both correct,
it keeps really, ratcheting up.
Well, the point is, though, is that you can see how much the difference between five, if Richard is correct, which I think he probably is, that 0.7% was the overhiring, so to speak.
Well, and another thing, I would think full employment is dependent. I don't think that's a static figure. I think that changes as productivity changes.
Well, you're exactly right. And also, some things have happened since 19. Some other things have happened since 1999. Joan, you guys pointed that out. Kiplinger pointed out that out this week too in the letter, and that's the increased effects of globalization.
Well, yeah, and then you have to factor all that in, which is a huge wild card.
Which brings us to, Joan, what I'm calling the cyclical unemployment situation and the structural unemployment situation. And you know what I mean by those two?
Well, I would think one is static and one is always changing.
Well, the cyclical is the people who are out of work who are going to get hired back doing essentially what they used to do. The structural are the people, these are my terms. The structural are the people who have lost their jobs and there is no job for them doing what they used to do.
Sure, like the people at the Domino sugar plant in Brooklyn who worked there for 20 or 30 years who have no job, who will have to, in order to get another job, will have to be retrained because there's no other sugar plant for them to work at.
Or the hundreds of thousands of garment jobs that have been in the United States since before the Revolutionary War that now are no longer here and won't be back ever.
Right.
And so, at least not in our lifetime. So those are the structural unemployment numbers. And those things, Joan, as you know, I mean, we got to quit whining about those things because, I mean, they're not, they weren't going to stay here. They were destined to leave this country. And we just got to figure out how, to me, the politician who can make the most hay out of all this is the one who's figured out a way to get these people retrained.
That's right.
What about, you know, one of the things you guys point out, though, is that, is the picture is not that gloomy. We got a much better rate now than we had in 82. If you think about that, I think this was an excellent point that you guys made this week, Joan, is that in 82, when the last expansion started, we had a 10.8% rate of unemployment rate.
I remember that because I remember thinking when people were moaning and groaning about 6% last year, thinking, boy, they certainly don't remember when the recession was real bad back in the early 80s.
Right, absolutely. There's another point I want to make about that, Jim. You guys made it, and I really want to land on that a little bit. And then I want to talk about what productivity numbers mean to job growth. And we'll do that right after these messages. Great points that Kiplinger brought out in their letter this week, 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we missed you last week.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you did.
Jim Ostroff did a good job sitting in for you. And we missed you for, I think, about 20 seconds maybe.
I'll take it.
Then we got over it. Joan, I'm really glad you guys published this part about the difference between where the unemployment rate was in 22 years ago, and where it is today as we enter this new expansion, and it's just more evidence to me of what I've been saying, what I've been predicting, and I did predict earlier in the year, and that is that this current expansion that we're in is going to be longer and stronger than the last one.
One would hope.
And, well, I mean, think about it. Your numbers here this week add to that. I mean, we're not as far in the hole with from this one as we were from the last one.
Right, we're starting from a much higher plateau.
I mean, think about this. Prior to 82, Joan, we'd come through about 10 years of tough times.
Right.
In fact, Joan, not only were we coming off of the Vietnam War in the early 70s, but we had a recession in 69. We had a some major recession in the mid-70s.
Well, remember we had that nasty stagflation, which is just... I was beginning to think that was never going to end. It was such a horrible spiral.
Exactly. That was in the late 70s. And, of course, don't forget we had Jimmy Carter for president. That's another thing to remember.
Now.
And then
we had
two, count them, two recessions in the first 3 years of the 80s.
We But businesses also did learn some hard lessons that they've made sure to not forget, and one of the big ones was build up of inventory.
That's right.
You know, I think that the smart businesses now generally are much leaner and meaner, and then there's this whole revolution called just-in-time.
Absolutely.
Which is aided by the computer revolution.
That's exactly right. No, you're exactly right. That was very astute of you to pinpoint that. That was the period when the JIT really became, people became believers of JIT.
Right.
And consequently, Joan, every recession since then has been shorter and lighter. And I attribute a lot of that to JIT.
Sure.
And I've asked a number of our economists on the show who've come on the show if they agreed with me, and every one of them has said that was right.
I know more about economics than I thought.
I'm impressed.
I've just been sort of making wild guesses here, and they seem to be working.
Here's another thing that we talked about earlier this week that I think is important, and it fits right in with what you guys are saying here. You talk about slower productivity gains for 2004. 2.5
right.
as opposed to 4.3% in 2003, so it's going to come down about two points.
Right.
And Richard DeCaser says that's good for jobs, that when productivity slows down, that actually means that people will start hiring more people.
Yeah, that sounds a little counterintuitive, because you would think, well, shouldn't we always want productivity to be up? And, well, yes, we should, except that you want to make sure there's enough jobs for people as well without getting inflation going again.
Well, see, what I've told my audience many times before is today in the 21st century, if you've got a new task, find the technology to do that task, and then find the people to run that technology.
Right.
And so what it seems to me is what I think this lower productivity that you guys are forecasting, I think I agree with you, because I think that means, if that happens, that means that we have wrung out all the efficiencies that we can get out of our technology. And now, in order to keep growing our businesses, we've got to add more people. And so from that standpoint, it makes sense to me.
Right.
So it's good for jobs.
Yes.
And this is a very interesting time that we're coming into, and it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, especially, Joan, in an election year. That'll be fun.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about some industries that you guys point out that are going to suffer a little bit. Manufacturing won't benefit from all this.
For one.
Yeah. And of course, we do have the dollar situation. There are a lot of people jawboning the dollar right now on both sides of the ocean.
Well, and since I'm your currency expert, I know about that better than anybody.
Okay, Joan, we're waiting.
I just know that there's a problem out there. I can't really go into it, but yeah. No, to be slightly serious about it, yes, we've had a very weak dollar, and I think it's counterintuitive to a lot of people. They hear weak and think bad, but weak isn't necessarily bad when you're talking about the dollar, because it helps our exporters.
Right.
Meanwhile, the European Union is moaning and groaning because they have a very strong euro right now.
Mm-hmm. And we can't get China to float their dollar, their yuan, which would help us, and they keep pegging it to the dollar, which makes us doesn't help us to compete with China with a weaker dollar. We can't compete with a weaker dollar with China because
right.
they keep pegging the yuan to our dollar.
And that's all we need.
We can't get them to turn loose of us, Joan.
Right. And that just means cheaper imports.
That's exactly right. So it's funny, the you know, if I don't know if you, Joan, if you remember the old skit that they used to do on Hee Haw, the country show back 30 years ago. They did a skit where the guy was saying something, and the other guy says, "That's bad." He says, "No, that's good." And they go back and forth. "That's bad." "No, that's good." And so when you're talking about currency, that's kind of the way it is, isn't it? Every movement is either bad. It's bad and good, depending on what you know. It's good for. The weaker dollar is good for manufacturing, but it's bad for interest rates and for investments coming into the United States. Stand by. Quick break. We're going to take a quick one. We'll be right back with our good friend Joan Pryde. When we come back, we've got a lot more things to talk about that Kiplinger has to say in their most recent letter. 29 after. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
And try to meet the masses. Go get yourself some cheap sunglasses.
In And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Mr. Gracious, Mr. Humble here. Hi, Joan.
Hello.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Don't forget the website that they have, folks. It's a dynamite website, Kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. And it's a great place to go. You find a lot of things there that you wouldn't, might not find anywhere else. Some of it's free, and some of it they ask you to subscribe for, and including the things that are in their letters. They have four of those. One's weekly. That's the one that's in its 81st year right now, the Kiplinger letter, which got a new makeover. What was it, about a year ago, you guys kind of changed it up
right.
a little bit? First time
that's
in a long time, so
yeah.
really helped it out a lot. And that's the weekly letter. And then they got three biweekly letters, the California, the tax, and the agriculture letter, three different letters of that, like those three. And then they got this magazine. What's the name of that magazine, Joe?
It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah, and that's you can also get that at newsstands. And, Joan, give us the phone number, too, please.
Yes, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And I worked really hard to get you a 30-day free trial period, folks. And so when you call them or when you go online, ask for that 30-day free trial, and they'll send it to you, and they'll send you. And, by the way, you can get the letters, not the magazine, but the letter by email or hard copy, either way. So check that out. Joan, let's talk about what's going on with this fiduciary insurance premium situation. You know anything about that?
Well, yes, and it's a real problem. We've been saying all along that because of the situations such as Enron, where, as you remember, a lot of employees lost their shirts when their 401ks really went into trouble. That people who are upset are looking for people to blame, and rightfully so.
Right.
And a lot of the, the finger pointing is going toward the company officials that are deemed to be the fiduciaries, and they're the ones who are supposed to be watching over these plans and
right.
making sure they're operating properly.
Right now, somebody's getting their dictionary out, looking up, "Am I a fiduciary?"
Right. And that's part of the problem the Department of Labor is trying to help small businesses
exactly.
with is that. They may not understand all of their fiduciary responsibilities to these plans.
Right.
But in any case, there's a lot of lawsuits out there. There's a lot of unhappy employees, a lot of lawsuits. And what's happened is that the insurance that you buy for fiduciary protection, you, the company, is going up and up and up.
Yeah.
And we've already talked about another kind of insurance called directors and officers, which has already gone through the roof. And this is kind of going right along with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, The thing is unfortunately, some business owners, by the time they found out that they were fiduciaries and really understood that, and they really understood what that meant, by the time they found it out, it was actually a euphemism for defendant.
Right, and the Department of Labor is beginning to understand that, and they do have a project going on that will ultimately be designed to provide education to businesses to
right.
make them understand their fiduciary responsibilities, what they have to do, and what they're liable for.
What would we do? Go to DOL.gov to find out more about
yes.
that? I don't see a website here, but Department of Labor, DOL.gov, go there and find out. Folks, noodle around on that site and see what they've got that would help you to understand your fiduciary responsibilities, maybe some exposures, maybe some new information. They might even have a list of some insurance companies that you can work with.
In fact, what you should do is go to the office within DOL that's responsible for that. It's called the EBSA, which is Employee Benefits Something Administration. But
right.
if you look down their list of offices, click on EBSA.
Right.
It's the old PWBA.
All right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's the old one, isn't it?
Used to be the Pension and Welfare Benefits Administration. Don't look for that anymore because it doesn't exist.
I won't look for that anymore, Joan. Thanks.
Thank you
for clearing that up for us. Let's move on down and talk about travel. Boy, I tell you, Joan, I bet you're glad you upgraded to that new jet last year.
Well, I wouldn't want to have to travel with the riffraff.
Well, exactly, because air travel is going up 4.5% a year this year, according to Kiplinger. So I'm really glad you upgraded and got that new jet so you don't have to put up with this.
But I still have problems. You know, I don't hear them building a lot of new airports and new runways,
So you're having to share your airports with the riffraff, your planes?
To share the airspace, too.
Wow. I don't know why. They need to get you your own stuff, Joan, so you don't have to ever have to deal with that. But anyway, air travel is going up 4.5% this year. But, Joan, in the meantime, though, while all that's going on, some of these companies are lowering their prices again.
Well, there's a lot of competition out there from upstarts.
Yep. It's a tough industry to be in. I got to say, I'm a pilot, and I like flying, but I don't think I'd want to be in the airline business these days.
No.
Quick break. Right back. When we come back, we're going to find out what it takes to crack the Asian market, and we're going to move over and talk a little bit of politics. We're going to talk a little bit about what Congress is up to right now with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
When nights close the tired eyes, I'll soon be with you, my love.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show, straight ahead, we got Mr. Jeffrey Zabar. We're going to talk about home-based business stuff. And then Barbara Welton is going to give us some 2004 tax tips. And then we've got an entrepreneur is going to join us. He runs a company called, Joan, you're going to love this, Dogfish Head Brewery. He's in Milton, Delaware, and he's going to talk to us about his company. He's a Delaware Small Business Person of the Year. And then we're going to talk about how to make sure that you navigate your retirement in the right way with a guy named Patrick Spain. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, just when we think maybe Japan's coming into the 21st century global marketplace, they're still being recalcitrant, aren't they, with regard to doing business with U.S. businesses?
What are we, in 2004?
Yeah.
I've been a reporter for 20 years. I remember 20 years ago I was covering talks on beef and citrus and other things. And I'm reading this underscore, and it says Japan remains a tough market to crack. I mean, some things never change.
Well, and I don't know what's wrong with those guys over there. They just, it's like they're in, they're like a national denial. I don't know. I mean, it's amazing. They're in denial about their debt. I pointed out that their debt is one-tenth of the U.S. gross domestic product. No, I'm sorry, not the debt, the bad debt.
Yeah.
$1.3 trillion, like 10% of the U.S. total production is in bad debt in Japan. So they need to be embracing some new practices over there, and turning us away is not one of them. South Korea, though, they're not working and playing well with others either, are they?
Boy, not at all. We're talking about their disregard for copyrights. That's very interesting.
We've known about this, though, in Asia for a long time, though, Joan, haven't we?
Yes.
China and all these guys?
Yes. Oh, China's been a terrible violator. But
we're
going after South Korea, and they're still not getting it. So I guess we're going to have to take it to the WTO, although we would like to avoid that.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's enough. I'm not sure you can load enough money into a project to offset those guys stealing our copyrights. I mean, by the time you fight all that, I mean, they've already, they're just going to keep going. I don't know what to do about that, John. This is a real problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Let's move on and talk a little bit of politics. How would John Kerry, how would a presidency with an administration with John Kerry at the head, how would that affect American business, John? What's Kiplinger have to say about that?
Well, we're saying that there would be a mixed outlook, that we're saying that he is not as pro-business as Bush is, but he's not anti-business either. And so that you can expect such things as, say, more tax cuts for business, at least.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know about that. You guys here say help for small businesses shown by his support for programs that help small business firms get support from contracts, et cetera. Yeah, that's very thin, Joan, to me.
Well, I don't know. He seemed very involved when he was the ranking member of the, and he might have been chairman briefly of the Senate Small Business Committee.
But he was a chairman there briefly, but nothing noteworthy there. But he also pointed out that he was a strong proponent of the Kyoto Global Warming Treaty, which every day is looking more like a boondoggle. I guess the developed nations.
Well, he is a supporter of the Kyoto Global Warming Treaty. Different people have different opinions on what that is.
Are you saying reasonable people can disagree on that? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no. Why would I say that?
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see, and I'll have more to say about Mr. Kerry's potential presidency as we move through the year, Joe. I know you'll be surprised to hear about that. What about all these drugstores? Man, the drugstore shakeout. You know, Joan, I drive around town, and I see a different major drugstore going up on every corner. I mean, my God, you'd think we were all taking thousands of drugs or something. How do they make
money? My area, we have three different drugstore chains duking it out. What I can't figure out is that they're buying pad sites and building new buildings to create these drugstores. It's incredible.
I saw one corner, Joan. They tore down a bank, a big bank.
Yeah,
and
I believe
it. And put up a drugstore.
Yeah.
And, you know, Joan, I'm not doing that much business with these people. Where are they getting their money?
Well, and that's the other thing. You figure with the big box stores, let's say Walmart, for example, a lot of people just get everything at Walmart. And they don't bother going getting certain things here and certain things there.
Right.
You know, I myself tend to get whatever pharmaceutical type things I need at the food store has a great drug aisle. You get your toothpaste there and your soap and everything. You don't need
to
go to the drugstore.
Absolutely. Well, and it looks like JCPenney's is close to selling off its Eckerd drugstores. And you know what? I guess I didn't even know JCPenney owned Eckerd.
I didn't either. No.
So that's news, I guess. But it's going to be interesting to see how the shakeout happens. And you know, was it Rite Aid that got into trouble a couple of years ago? I think that's the company.
I think so.
Was having some trouble.
Yeah.
They actually had some. I saw one building that they were working on that they didn't work on for about a year. So they kind of held off on that a little bit. Let's move over and talk about Congress, Joan. What's it going to look like this year? Bush's new budget's out, 2.5 trillion. What is it? 2.4, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, and it's sort of interesting that we've had more developments in the news since this was written. And this week, the Republicans are falling all over themselves to look like deficit cutters. So I think that's going to be the theme. Mr. Hastert, who is the Speaker of the House, just came out yesterday and said that except for Social Security, nothing is off the table.
Wow.
So I think they're concerned about being perceived as running up the deficit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they have. And I think I may have mentioned, Joan, one time before that I read an article where the guy said, I wish I could say the author, apologies to him, but he said, you know, it's not a matter of that Republicans are not as big a spenders as Democrats. It's just a matter of who's in power.
Right.
That the ones in power, Democrats, Republicans, mugwumps, they're the big spenders. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. It's 10 Till. Don't go away. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, according to Kiplinger this week, the Republicans and the Democrats are going to have their way with Mr. Bush's budget. What's up with that?
Well, I think so. You know, we've said that this is a political document, and it talks about tax cuts, a lot of spending. But liberals and conservatives in Congress also have their own agendas. But that's nothing unusual. The budget is a blueprint, but it's sort of a starting point, and then Congress sort of takes it from there.
Yeah, and one of the things that kind of surprises me a little bit is you guys predict that defense spending will be sure to be cut. Several billion dollars. Now, why would they do that?
Well, I don't think they would. They wouldn't cut defense spending. I think they would cut the rate of growth.
Yeah.
In defense spending.
Well, here's what it says: defense spending is sure to be cut by several billion dollars. That's underlined. Did I misread?
Yeah,
that?
I mean, I know, but I don't know that you meant to say it that way.
Oh, okay. You know, in other words, I read it right, but you might not have meant to say it.
Exactly.
No, I can't believe Kiplinger.
Go ahead,
would
rub my nose in it. That's okay.
No, I would never do that,
Joan.
Because
we still say amounting to a 7% increase.
You know, Joan, the thing about it is you know, I know I sound like a hawk, but I'll tell you, it is true. We live in a dangerous world, and this week, Joan, with the revelation of the guy and the lead nuclear scientist in Pakistan running an underground black market economy for nuclear weapons and parts centrifuges and the knowledge to put all that together. Now that we know that he was doing that, selling it to Libya and who knows where else. I mean, anybody who doesn't, who refuses to understand that this is a dangerous world, just can't. I don't know what they're smoking. and of course, but of course, in fairness, Joan, as you know, those things that were just mentioned, you know, we can fight those a different way than with the military, right?
Absolutely.
With good intelligence,
right?
Which we haven't had in a while, have we?
Well, it sure seems that way.
Yeah. And you know, that's one of the things that we can't do. We've got to, you know, and I know it sounds like I'm picking on the Bush Gore team, and I don't mean to accept to say
the
that
Bush
that,
Gore team.
I mean the Clinton Gore team. Thank you for helping me out.
That was a strange 40 flip.
Yeah, that's right. The Clinton Gore team. Well, the thing is, you know that they gutted a lot of the teeth of the intelligence gathering organizations back in the 90s when they wouldn't let people, you know, do the clandestine or the some of the dirty tricks that they used to do. So who knows what might have happened. Joan, what about the highway bill? Mr. Bush going to get what he wants?
Boy, well, you know, there's been a real problem with the highway bill, and again, more news development since this was written, that they were trying to attach the energy bill to the highway bill so they could get both through. Remember that energy bill that didn't get through last year?
Yeah.
But that apparently that attempt has failed, so both are still pretty well stuck in the Senate.
That may be the first bill that Mr. Bush vetoes, the highway bill.
If they can get it to his desk, that's
some
the problem.
Some people are predicting that might be the one, the chairman of that committee, apparently, I think you guys may have pointed out a while back, that whatever he sees, he wants to pave it.
That's
so,
right.
Joan, let's move on down and talk about Iran. There's some interesting things coming out of Iran these days. What's the Khatami? Is that the president's name? The progressive president, Khatami, I think. He spoke at Davos, in the Davos Economic Forum, in the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, a couple of weeks ago. And he really was very outspoken about how he felt that the elections in Iran needed to include all candidates. And he went back, and they didn't kill him yet, but which I'm surprised.
You never know.
But apparently, Joan, the really controlling religious leaders over there have eliminated some of the progressive candidates, and he's gone along with that. That's really unfortunate, isn't it?
It sure is.
Do you think that could wind up being a serious revolution? There could be a serious revolution over in Iran before too long.
Well, there's a really important little factoid in here. We say about 70% of Iranians were born after the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Think about that.
Yeah. The Middle East, much of the Middle East, is the opposite of Europe and say the Asian.
Oh, with our aging population and Europe's aging population,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, and I don't know about Iran, but in Saudi Arabia, the mean age in Saudi Arabia is 18.
Wow.
So I think Iran probably is not that far off, apparently.
But
we will see what we will see. It'll be interesting to watch that. I hope it turns out well. Joan, thanks for being here today. Good job. Thank you, Jim.
We'll
see you next week.
Okay.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.